Sure, good as any.
Okay, first, let me say I appreciate this very much.
Okay.
I'm taking your time, and it's doing me a favor, so I really appreciate it. I'll ask you, maybe a dozen questions, and if you would, please just answer as short or as long as you want to. If you don't want to answer, just don't do it.
Okay.
They're pretty generic questions. I don't think anything will be out of line. You attended Washington State.
Yeah, Washington State University, yeah.
Yes, sir. You play ball there?
Yes, 2 years.
Did you go in the service from there?
No.
You did not? You missed the war?
No, I did not miss the war.
You preceded?
When the war broke out, well, I signed a contract with Los Angeles Angels, which was a Wrigley organization, and with a bonus feature in the sale, and I went down and played in the Texas League in Tulsa.
Uh-huh.
And then I went into back to college, and then from there I went into the service in the Air Force for 3 years.
That was a real killer for a lot of guys.
Yeah. And then from there, when I broke out of there, it was a whole mass of ball players to work through, and I went to spring training with Los Angeles, and there was 5 jobs, and I got one of them.
Oh, that's...
I stayed at L.A. They sold me the Cubs in 46. In 47, they sent me back to L.A., and they wanted to win a pennant, and we won one. I had a great year.
You had a fantastic year. You led the league in wins and strikeouts.
Yeah, yeah.
And
then the next year, they stayed in Chicago, and they tore that ball club up, and they had a lot of rookies, and it was a lousy ball club, and I won 2 and lost 9.
Yeah.
And they had to have Frank Gustine was a... They traded me for Frank Gustine, Clyde McCulloch and I. They had to have a third baseman. They tried to put Pafko third. He wouldn't go, so he couldn't handle it. So they had more left-handers than they wanted, so I wound up at Pittsburgh, and that's where I really centered in.
Well, evidently that was a great trade for you and for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think so.
You arguably you were, Spahn was there, and I don't guess you were Spahn's class, but there weren't, outside of Spahn, you were probably one of the top two or three left-handers in the league at that point.
I think so. I would say so, yes.
You led the Pirates in wins the 2 years you were with them.
Yeah, and then Ricky came, and he and I got in a fight over money. And so he said, I'll trade you. So he traded me to St. Louis. And that year at St. Louis, when I was there before I broke my wrist, I was getting 2 wins. I just told him, I'm getting 2 wins for every loss. And then, on 34 starts, that's a 20-game win.
That sure is.
And the next year, I had about 5 starts, and I was 4-2 or something like that. And I got hit in the wrist, broke my wrist.
And that kind of wound it down at that point.
Yeah.
You didn't seem to recover.
Well, also, they got Stanky, and he and I didn't belong. And then the next year when I went to spring training, it was very obvious that he wasn't going to use me. And so I put in the year, and I said, well, the hell with it, I'll quit. So he sent me out to, they traded me out to the best manager in baseball in left field, Duel, who was then managing San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And I just put in time there and quit. He said, I'm going to send you back to the big leagues, but I said I didn't want to go.
Well, you were, 32 or 3 at that point.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Stanky, a lot of fellas swear by him, a lot of them swear at him. Eddie Stanky.
He was terrible for me. He was just terrible. I could never play for a guy like that. He's a dummy,
Uh-huh.
He shouts and hollers and screams, and Christ, I can't concentrate on what I was doing. But it's very obvious when they're not going to use you. It's very obvious, in spring training. And there's no reason, to just, I can see them trading you or doing something like that with you, but, just not using you, that's all.
Yeah.
His mind was made up before. He was a dummy. He was just a dummy.
Doesn't seem to be much middle ground on him. You liked him or you didn't like him. I think there's more dislikes.
I liked him in the ball club I was on, I'll tell you.
That's the general consensus.
Some of these little guys, he picked up on DeRocher, and if you knew DeRocher well enough, he got away with it a lot better. But they seemed to think because they were small that they had to outsmart everybody. And it's a kid's game. You can't outsmart anybody.
Yeah.
It's just a kid's game. That's all it is. And you try to outsmart anybody and you ruin everybody, see?
Yes.
You just can't do it, that's all. You see guys every day on TV, and they're jerking those pitchers out of there, pitching a shutout, and then the relief pitchers have a hell of a time holding a five-run lead.
It's hard to imagine how they can take a man out with 2 hitters in the 9th inning, and they pull him. Let's go back to Pittsburgh. You were not with a good team.
It wasn't a good team.
Your one-loss percentage was... Oh, I don't remember what it was, but considerably higher. I've got the records here somewhere.
I had 13-7 in Well, the first year was with Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, you were 6 over .500 on a team that was 12 under .500.
And then the next year I pitched a lot. I didn't get pitch much until about June in that first year I was with him. And the next year I won 12 and lost 15 pitching regularly. And we finished last.
What would you have done on a Dodgers team, you think?
Well, you know, I the next year I pitched a no-hitter and I got a sore arm, and he was a sore arm down. He traded me down to St. Louis, which is a third-place ball club, and I lose 2 for every one I won. Now, I didn't become a great pitcher overnight. It was I had a better ball club. That was,
right.
It was a terrible ball club at Pittsburgh. Danny Murtaugh was done. He couldn't get the ball. We didn't have anybody play first base. We didn't have anybody third base. Kiner couldn't field the ball if his life depended on it. Wally Westlake was not a center fielder.
No.
Gus Bell was a pretty good ball player, but he wasn't a good defensive ball player. We had nobody to play first base. Oh. Jack Phillips, and the best one we had was Johnny Hopp. So we didn't have anything. Clyde McCulloch was a .240 hitter, so, you know, what did you have?
It was very hard for anybody to name some starters from the Pirates team of those years.
That's right.
It's a very tough. Talk about your no-hitter.
Well, that was kind of, I don't know. I was sick. I pitched a ball game and beat Brooklyn in their ball team. As a left-hander, I thought that was a pretty good job.
Yes, it was.
Because a lot of managers wouldn't even start a left-hander against that club, let alone start them in Brooklyn. I just had beat them, and I got the flu, and I was stayed in bed while they finished that series, and then they went over and played the Giants, and I still didn't even go to the ballpark. And we took the train and went up there, and we played a doubleheader on Sunday, and I went in and lay down on the rubbing table the first ball game because I didn't feel good. And they said, the manager or the trainer came in and said, can you go? Bill Posdell took over temporarily as a manager. Good manager. We left in New York, and he said, can you give us 4 or 5 innings? We ain't got anybody to pitch because half the club was sick. I said, well, I'll do my best. So I went out and cranked up and pitched no hitter. So I felt terrible. That's the way it was. And then I got a sore arm from it. I don't know whether it was from the flu or just what it was, but I had trouble in the shoulders after that. It finally took about 3 or 4 months and it worked out. But I don't know. It's after I broke my wrist, my fastball wouldn't hop, and I would guess I probably had at least a 95-mile-an-hour fastball or better.
Wow.
It was live. Nobody could pull me. There wasn't a hitter in the big leagues that could pull me. If they knew what was coming, then I threw it right down the middle. And so, I developed better control. Guy taught me control was a relief pitcher named Hugh Casey, pitcher from Brooklyn.
Pittsburgh.
And he straightened out my footwork. And once I got my footwork straightened out, I began to get control. And then I, after I broke my wrist, I come up with slider and stuff like that. But I had to pitch differently.
You mentioned Bill Posdell. How was he as a pitching coach?
He was a wonderful coach. I knew him in the Coast League when he was playing with Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And he finally wound up his career as a pitching coach at Oakland when they had the great team there.
When I was 18 years old, the Giants were playing at Seal Stadium. I was living down in the peninsula, and I was scouted, and eventually I was invited up to throw for Posdell. And evidently he didn't like me as much as the scout did, because that's as far as it went. But he was an awfully nice man.
He is. He is a good man.
Talked, and he tried to explain, you know, that my future was elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, Bill Meyer was a manager, and my normal catcher was Clyde McCulloch, but the guy who caught me in a no-hitter was Eddie Fitzgerald, who came out of the Coast.
Oh, yeah, I remember him.
Caught at Sacramento. Very good catcher.
That was the first no-hitter by a southpaw in something like 7 or 8 years.
Well, they said the first one in Pittsburgh was pitched for Pittsburgh since back in the 1890s or something.
Yeah, the first one in Pittsburgh since the, well, was it?
I can't hear you.
First. Second one ever by a Pirate, and the first one, in 50 years or so. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Hello? Hello?
Monday, 9:09 p.m.
you faded out.
You faded out and came back, so I don't know what happened.
Okay.
Is it okay now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
I guess I couldn't hear you.
Okay, well, let's go on to your hitting. You were a heck of a good hitting pitcher.
Yeah, I could have went pro as a hitter. In fact, if the war hadn't came along, the Yankees and Red Sox were both after me as a they said, we'll use you an outfielder first baseman first, and if you don't hit, well, then we'll then you can pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do have a guy that can play every day, and I am in the Athletic Hall of Fame at Washington State University mainly on my hitting. I hit 440 the first year, or sophomore year. My junior year, I hit 375. So,
wow.
I could hit all right. I think my lifetime was about 223 or something. For a pitcher, that's not too bad.
235.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awfully good.
I hit 284 one year. Nobody paid attention to it.
That's big.
The year I won 12 and lost 15, but I was getting a little bit of batting practice. See, pitchers don't get any batting practice, and when you don't get any batting practice, you know, they throw the ball right by you, you know?
Yeah, well, it's a function of doing. You batted over 280 twice.
Yeah.
Three home runs. Do you remember them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the one I liked the best is I hit one off of a knuckleballer named Willie Ramsdale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I for all places, I hit it to left field. It was like hitting a butterfly, you know. But if he'd have thrown the ball hard, he'd probably thrown it right by me.
That's about all he threw, though.
Yeah, well, sure.
Yeah.
But you know, hitting is a fun part of the game.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. What do you do?
I'm a veterinarian.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Where'd you go to vet school?
University of Georgia.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You know Washington State's a vet school.
Yes, I do. Yeah. It's a good one, a very, very good one. I work on horses, and Washington State's got one of the best equine departments in the country.
Yeah, I have horses myself.
Oh, do you? What do you have?
Yeah, I have two Arabs.
Oh, yeah.
I have an Arab mare and a gelding, and then we have 160 acres in the backcountry right next to the Frank Church Wilderness area.
Uh-huh.
And we have a house up there, and I spend about 5-6 months a year up there.
Well, that sounds
we're
nice.
We're getting ready to go up there right now.
Yeah, and your note you sent, you're going to be gone from June to October, I think it said?
Yeah, pretty much.
Is that where you're going to be?
Yeah, that's where we go, and we go up there, and we hunt, and we horseback, and we ride horses almost every day. And I was just up there. I just came back out, and we know we have elk in a place, and
yeah.
15 deer running around. It's quite a, you know, we're still totally surrounded by national forest.
Oh, it sounds great.
For 100 miles east of me, there's no roads.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
No TV, no telephone.
Oh, God. Boy.
Water out of the creek.
That sounds great. I tell you, between the TV and the telephone, I'm driven crazy around here.
Oh, yeah. Well, you work on a lot of horses down here?
That's all I do is horses, yes, sir.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What's the main breed down here?
Thoroughbreds.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You work on racehorses and stuff?
Mostly broodmares. A little bit of racehorses. They become, you know, the foals become racehorses. But
I said you're breeding to run. You breed to run, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
I've always said it beats working for a living. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I would think so. Exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's great.
Something different. You don't have to punch in. You're not in the office all the day.
Well, I had when my daughters were growing up, I had horses for them. And then we got out of it for a while, and I decided to go back and. I got in the Arabs backwards like everybody does. I had a half Arab, and they were so superior that when I went back into horses, I said, well, I've got a Morgan that's 10 years old. I use him to pack and ride, and, you know, all-purpose horse. And then I've got an old horse for the kids. But, you know, my Arabs are just, I wouldn't, you know, they're just something else.
I've got a couple of clients who own Arabs. It's, I guess I'm 95% thoroughbreds, but a few Arabs and a few quarter horses. And the Arabs are really a lot of fun to work on. I enjoy them.
Well, they have a distinct personality, and you have to treat them different.
Yes, yeah.
And when you have to feed them twice a day and you're around them all the time, you learn to really appreciate that.
That's
like big dogs, you know.
That's something that here, on a breeding farm in which they've got 100 brood mares and 85 foals, they're not. The people don't know the horses. I think probably all breeds would be that way, given half a chance. But the people, the Arab people, have 4 and 5 horses. And each horse is, as you say, an individual. And that's the way they ought to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they're not really a beginner's horse, you know.
Oh, no. No, no.
And a lot of horse trainers don't like them because you can't get after them too hard. You got to kind of make them think it's their idea. And you work, you know, with a lot of praise, and they really dote on that praise business. You know, it goes a long ways with those guys.
Well, it's just a lot of it's just plain old common sense that people don't want to take the time with,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, well, mine are good in the mountains, and we ride in some very, very tricky stuff that, you know, one slip and you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why I like them. They're strong and they don't eat very much and they're tough. And they'll take you through that with those tough trails and those...
That's not something...
...where you're looking over the toe of the boot 2,000 feet down.
Oh, boy. That's not something I picture an Arab doing.
Yeah, they're good at it.
Oh, that's interesting, because I really would not have considered an Arab for that purpose.
Oh, yeah, well, most people don't, but I wouldn't, you know, they don't eat today. They don't. They are good keepers, you know.
And, oh, yeah.
And they're just strong and sure-footed, and they just get the quiet ones. So, too many people are in Arabs because they think it's like owning a BMW, see. They're not in it for the horse. All I want the horse to do is what I want him to do. I don't care if he, you know, I don't want him to do anything else. And about all he ever does is walk, and he get two or three different kinds of walks, and that's all I care about, you know. And I can pack him if I have to. But, they, you know, I've fallen down underneath them and on real tough trails and stuff, and they just stand there, you know.
Yeah, they do seem to be very sensitive breed, as a rule.
Yeah, they're very, very dependable.
Well, they're fun. I'm glad to hear you have horses. I like to. Another fellow with horses, you remember Harlan Clift?
Who?
Harlan Clift, third baseman in the American League.
Slightly.
Yeah, he just passed away, but he and his son bred quarter horses over in Washington, right next door to you.
No kidding.
And his son's still doing it, but he just passed away here recently, but he really loved his horses, too.
Yeah. There was a guy that was breeding horses that I, Big Joe Adcock, who used to play with Cincinnati.
Yeah, right. He's down in Louisiana, right.
Down in Louisiana, yeah.
And, well, you remember Clint Konatzer?
Just again.
Yeah, you played against him. He was with Boston for a couple of years when you were there. He and Adcock have some horses in partnership, and I've met Clint, lives up in Southern California, but he's here for the horse sales sometimes, and I see him.
That's great. I the guy that owns the ball club here in Boise was heavily involved in Arabs down at in the days of the good tax write-offs down there in Scottsdale, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that was big Arab country.
Bill Piera, he was the son of an architect and very wealthy. Lives over in Sun Valley, but he owns a little local ball club, and I know him. And he wrote a book on Arabs, a beautiful book, and gave me a copy. And,
that's nice.
Yeah, well, it was enjoyable.
But let's get back to your career. This is fun talking. This is the other than the no hitter. Is there one game that stands out?
Yeah, there is. But it was in the Coast League. The Coast League was kind of a world apart.
The Coast League was the greatest minor league. It wasn't even a minor league. It was great.
Yeah, it was the only minor league with no salary limit.
Yeah.
A lot of guys that just couldn't quite cut it in the big leagues, they played in the Coast League. And it was not a farm setup, you know, to develop players to go to the big leagues. And the weather was good. The towns were good and everything. And I was with L.A., and we wound up that good year I had. And a dead heat with San Francisco, and I pitched nine innings on Saturday night. We finished the season on Sunday with a dead heat, and we were in Sacramento, and San Francisco was down in San Diego. So we met in L.A. the next day, Monday, one game, sudden death.
Mm-hmm.
All my ball players wanted me to pitch, and I did on one day's rest. And the game went eight innings, nothing to nothing. And at the bottom of the eighth inning, a kid named Clarence Matter hit a home run, the bases loaded.
Who was it?
Another guy hit a home run, and I shut him out 5-0.
Wow.
And won the ball game. And that was nine innings, because I pitched a hard nine innings on Saturday against Sacramento. They were always tough ball club for me. And then come back and pitch on one day's rest. So I thought that was pretty good.
Yes, it was.
With all the money was on the line.
Well, that put you guys in the lead, and you beat Oakland in the playoffs that year, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we won the pennant on that, and then.
Yeah. Well, that is pretty. That was, I guess, your last minor league game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. In your time, who was the best hitter, best player you saw?
Well, you know, the records were pretty good. Of course, the best hitter I faced against and played with was Musial.
Yeah.
The best defensive ball player I ever seen against or with was Red Chandies. I think he's the most underrated of anybody I ever seen.
Uh-huh.
Because he could go to his right and or go to his left and make the double play, and I never seen any shortstop do that. He did it consistently.
Yeah.
And he was a good, solid 290 switch, I would say. Great ball player.
Yeah. An extremely consistent ball player.
And there were different guys, but of course, Musial was, you know, he was kind of a streak hitter, but I think probably the most classic and probably better hitter overall was maybe Williams, but Williams was in the other league. I only got to see him in spring training,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't get to see much of DiMaggio.
Yeah, that's true. He was winding down.
Krasinski was a good hitter, but he didn't give me any problems. Mize was a good hitter. He left-handed. He didn't give me any problems.
Who was the toughest on you?
Well, Musial would hit his average.
Yeah.
You know, regardless, you know. I don't care left or right. Because the reason for that, he stood so far away from the plate, it didn't make any difference whether you're right or left-handed anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, right-handers. I don't even... I guess, you know, we used to have two lineups in those days because there was, I think, a lot more, and I hope I'm not sounding difficult on this, but, you know, there's 700 big league ball players. There were only 400 when I played, and
right.
The lineups, when a left-hander went out to work, you know, any mediocre left-hander, he did not get to play. So only left-handers I faced were the very, very best.
Sure.
And that would be like Earl Ferguson in Boston and Enos Slaughter and Musial in St. Louis and Krasinski and Wyrostek over in Cincinnati. And I always worked those clubs because there were two left-handers in the lineup, see?
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of those clubs. And then in Brooklyn, my God, you know, the only left-handed hitter they had was Duke Snider. He was no push.
Oh, yes.
They had a lot of big right-handed hitters, see?
Yeah, that must have been a tough lineup to go in there against.
Well, I learned how to pitch against them, and the guy that really helped me a lot, taught me, was Johnny Smith. You know, when you got a hard swing in a club like that, you have to throw a lot of off-speed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't do well. He didn't do well with that.
Yeah, he used to have good success against the Dodgers.
Yeah, well, he threw that big slow curveball.
Mm-hmm.
He had a big slow curve, and they used to. And the guy that really killed him, they would put you in stitches, was a kid named Stu Miller. I saw him.
Yeah,
St. Louis pitch against them, and you could not believe it was the funniest thing you ever saw in your life.
65 miles an hour.
Well, yeah, they almost spiked him. You know, they're out there so far. You know, he could. You know, he had a great change. He had something in his motion. You'd swing ahead of him in a pepper game. You know,
he was successful with it for a number of years too.
Yeah.
Who was the best pitcher?
Pitcher.
Yeah.
Oh, probably Spahn and Roberts.
Yeah. That'd be a couple to start your pitching staff with.
Yeah, I never. I beat Spahn a few times, and of course he beat me. But I was never that good of luck against Philadelphia. I don't remember Roberts. I don't remember ever beating him. I beat Simmons. Simmons was probably as good a pitcher as Roberts, but he cut his toe off of the lawnmower, and he never was worth a damn after that.
Yeah.
But he had great stuff. Jeez, he had great stuff. But Roberts had what I call double-breaking fastball, and I never see anybody do that. He's just a super guy, a super pitcher.
Uh-huh. All.
Those are the two best, I would guess.
Oh, that's a good pair. You've been retired a whole bunch of years now. Do you still receive fan mail?
I get about 4 letters a week.
Okay, autograph request?
Yeah.
Okay. When this appears...
Bubblegum cards and stuff like
yeah.
that, and photos and stuff.
When this appears, your number of autograph requests will increase for a period of 2 or 3 weeks. I hope that's not a problem.
Beg your pardon?
When this is published, the number of autograph requests will increase for a period of 2 or 3 weeks.
Is that right?
Yes, I hope that's not a problem.
Yeah, well, I got nothing better to do.
Okay.
I'm retired.
That's the attitude. These doggone guys that, I don't know, you know, it's nice to be remembered. You know, it's a tribute that somebody cares enough to write you, I think.
Oh, I do. I really appreciate it. I don't write all the letters, but, you know, I write a little something extra on the cards usually and stuff. And you know, if they like the game and they're that interested in it and they want to do that, that's fine with me, you know.
Good.
And, sure.
Well, one fella, I don't know, Gale Harris, if you remember him, played for the Tigers and Giants back in the late 50s. He said he would average 4 to 6 requests a week.
Yeah.
In the first 3 weeks after I interviewed him, after it appeared, he said he got a total of about 100. So that's about as big an increase as anybody's got.
Where are you going to publish this?
It's in a magazine called Sports Collector's Digest, and it's geared just for that, people who collect baseball cards and souvenirs.
Yeah.
And it'll probably appear, the usual time is 4 to 6 months after I send it in.
I was on CNN television the other night.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, and the anniversary of my no-hitter, they ran a film clip of the TV of the last pitch and at the end of the game, which I've never even seen myself. And the only way I know about it, the phone started ringing. Guys were calling me from all over hell. They asked me if I'd seen it. See, I said, no, I didn't even know it was on. See, I was out shoveling manure out here with the horse.
Good. Doing honest work. Oh, I wish I'd seen it. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And I thought that was pretty something.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, and of course, Bobby Cox, who's the manager of Atlanta, was on that ball club.
Oh, was he really?
He saw my no-hitter.
I didn't realize that. I didn't know he went back with it far.
Yeah, I didn't know it either, but that's what they said.
Yeah. Well, did you save souvenirs from your career?
Beg your pardon?
Did you save any souvenirs over the years from your
career? I went to an old-timers game. I got a bat everybody autographed, and then I gave most of my autograph balls away, but I still got, I think, 5 left.
Okay.
And, I'm not a great... I got a couple of my own gloves, but that's... They were after me, and I should have sent the film in on that... when baseball was a game, it was these guys were made that film out of out of New York, out of 8mm movies that this guy shot, and I had a lot of that, and I didn't send it to them. So, other than that, I don't have much... I don't have any kids to leave it to, so... I had a daughter, and she died, and I had another daughter who we're estranged from, and so, you know, I don't have any grandchildren or anything, so I'd probably give this other stuff away to somebody.
Well, you know, the Hall of Fame is always interested in stuff like that.
Hmm?
The Hall of Fame is always interested in getting stuff like that.
Is that right?
Yeah. You know, I don't know what your tax situation is, but it can be a pretty good, decent tax write-off, I understand.
Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know who to... Well, I do know. If only,
how do you evaluate that?
Somebody would have to appraise it.
Yeah.
There's a fellow named Bill Guilfoyle. He's in charge of it. You could contact him at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. And,
okay.
Guilfoyle, I believe it is.
Yeah.
And he could talk to you about it. They're always interested in receiving things. And there is some sort of tax write-off there. I don't know how it works. But,
yeah, well, they would just have to... Somebody would have to validate it.
Yeah. Yeah, but that wouldn't be too difficult, I wouldn't think.
Sure.
Any regrets from your career?
Well, you know, like anybody, if I could do it over again, I would think I would try to be a different kind of guy, and I would be able to take the game a little more in stride. And, of course, what really set us awful, terribly bad straights was World War II. I figured the World War II cost me about 4 to 5 years of big league time.
Oh, yeah.
And... I have a physical condition which inherited called stork leg, and I couldn't get up on my toes and run after I was 30 years old, and I would begin to get back problems, and I was always a slow runner anyway. And so I don't know that I could have went to 38 or 39. I guess, all things considered, I maybe shouldn't have thrown my career away when I did. O'Doul said, I'm going to send you back to big leagues, and I said, no, I don't want to go. I think a lot of it was money. If you're only going to make 15, 18, 20,000 a year, what the hell, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If I hadn't had a college degree, I would have probably fought it right down to the last barrel. See?
Well, that's a big difference.
I had a college degree. See, I finished my degree, and I had a degree, and I said, well, if I'm smart enough to get a degree, I'm smart enough to make a living doing something. So I think that was one of the reasons that I quit. Not many guys that played in the big leagues had a college degree.
Well, back in those days, with a college degree, you could make as much as you made in playing ball.
Oh, yeah, right.
Today, it's a little different story.
Yeah,
but,
it's a different ball game today. Yeah, well, the only other guy I knew was Danny Littweiler. You know, he and I were the only two I knew. That.
Yeah, there were a few here and there, but not very many. The guys without a college degree, if they couldn't play ball, they couldn't do anything.
Yeah, well, all of my friends up there that I still know, like Red Adams, that was a coach at Dodgers, never did go to the big leagues for any time, and I still have contact. He's about the only guy I still have contact with, and those guys never even finished high school, so what else do you know? They really fought it, and to stay in the game, you know, because it's all they knew.
Sure.
And so I guess that was probably why O'Doul couldn't figure out why I wanted to quit, and I said, well, you know, I've had enough Eddie Stankies, and I've had enough Branch Rickeys, and
yeah, well, you don't need them. You know, if you could go back and make $1 million, that's different. But you're going to go back for the same or less.
$1 million. Well, of course, in the way it is now, if you got a broken wrist, man, if they'd even pay you big money to send you to the minors and get you in shape to come back, see?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's such a dearth of talent. If you can win, you know, man, they want, you know, they hang right on to you.
You'd have never gotten to win 24 games in the minor leagues today because they'd have pulled you up mid-season or sooner.
Well, no. Well, the minor leagues only exist for the benefit of the big leagues now.
Right.
You know, and, you know, that's all it's for. It's just a training ground for big leagues because television changed the whole deal.
Well, they killed the minor leagues. Absolutely killed them.
And everything else.
Yeah.
Everything is big leagues. And, of course, now they're going to add two more ball clubs, so now you'll have another
even more diluted
50 ball players.
They'll find them somewhere, but they won't be major leaguers.
You know, look at the averages. Here you get guys hitting 220, 230. When I played, Billy Koch on the Brooklyn ball club was the worst hitter in the club hitting 270.
Yeah.
And the worst hitter in the Cardinals was Marty Marion hitting 265.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the worst hitter in the club.
That's the best hitter on teams now.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, what the hell?
It's all relative, I guess. I mean, you're going up against a bunch of the 220 hitters,
yeah,
you're all right.
And they expected starting pitchers to go nine innings.
Mm-hmm.
And my job was to hold them to three runs and pitch nine innings.
Yeah. Now you still have to hold them to three runs, but they only want you to go five or six.
Yeah, they think you've really done something. You know? I pitched every third day. They're only going to pitch me six innings.
Yes. It's just a whole different approach. I don't know if it's better or worse, but it's different for sure.
Well, I know that from my own experience that if you know in late innings when you're tired that you know you walk a guy, they're going to put the hook in you. You know, you kind of look for help. You kind of look to get out of there because it's, you know, you're tired and what the hell, you want to win. You got a 3-run lead or something like that. In other words, you start looking for help. But boy, I'll tell you, when you're pitching.